The following program is rated PG. Please be advised that what you are about to hear may contain mature themes, mild uses of bad language, and some instances of violence which may be unsuitable for younger listeners. Parental guidance is suggested.
The Bad Ideas Podcast. Tonight's episode, A Tale of Two Hunchbacks.
Right, hello there, folks. I'm Lee, and today I'm joined by...
Matthew.
Standing opposite me on the other podium. And today, we are going to debate which was worse. Yeah. No, wait, were we debating which was better, or do we agree on which was worse was easier?
Which is better, I think, is better.
Okay.
It's a lot, again, forced to defend, you know, both of us complaining about how the other one is terrible is okay, but I think it's a bit more entertaining to force us to suffer whilst we defend things that we despise. I think it makes for better.
Anywho, folks, welcome to the pilot edition of As If Yet Untitled Podcast. Mm. The idea was something Matthew suggested, where we look at a, you know, popular Disney movie and then compare it to its bootleg. But then we both quickly realise that's really unfair to the bootleg.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Disney is a multi-billion-dollar corporation as opposed to places like Golden Films and Filmation, which, you know, they aren't. So instead, we're going to pit them against the lesser-known one, the direct-to-DVD or direct-to-video sequel, which naturally has a roughly the same budget.
You know, those famous direct-to-VHS sequels throughout the 90s when we were growing up as kids. You know, every other week there was a brand new direct-to-VHS sequel. Because we all wanted to find out about what happened to Mowgli after the events of Jungle Book. And, you know, we so badly wanted a prequel to Little Mermaid and a prequel to Bambi.
You know what? Actually, to be fair, all the people on DeviantArt desperately wanted that Jungle Book sequel, specifically because that meant that they could do some more car hypnosis fetish stuff that they had just for drawing stuff. And that line's probably going to get cut out, but it's the truth, and you can't silence that.
So we are going to start off with something we watched together. The original Disney sequel to Hunchback of Notre Dame, whose full title I cannot remember.
It was just literally just Hunchback of Notre Dame 2.
What, no like subtitle like Theft of the Bell?
No.
Nothing cool like that?
Nope.
Or Quasi Finds Love?
Bold of you to assume Disney cared that much.
I mean, figure the Recess film's got subtitle things afterwards. You know, Recess the movie. Taking the fifth grade.
That was just the last five episodes that they didn't want to. They didn't have a time slot to throw on there, so they just made them into a movie.
Kim Possible the movie, A Stitch in Time.
A Stitch in Time, and yeah, actually, yes, that was just a. That's literally just a two-parter that they threw together into a movie.
It aired as a movie over here.
Yeah, no, I'm saying that it is, but if you go onto Disney Plus, then they've actually got it as it's not a movie. It's just three episodes of the show.
We like to also thank Disney Plus for putting all these, you know, questionable movies on their service. Totally worth that roughly £5 a month, I think.
Mm.
There's also good stuff on there. Have you seen Mandalorian, folks? You should. Anywho, so we took a look at the Golden Films Hunchback of Notre Dame alongside the Disney Hunchback of Notre Dame 2. I will be defending, as best I can, the Golden Films Hunchback of Notre Dame, as I have a history with Golden Films. On my old podcast, I covered a couple of their movies, including the Atlantis one with a very questionable scene.
Well, I will be defending Hunchback of Notre Dame 2. I will be the Disney stan in this, and also mainly I'll be defending it because Lee is across this very expensive-looking set that I promise you, it is here. We have built it all. It does exist. But the thing is, he also has a gun, which...
he managed to escape me. Well, he's got to contend with my brother, who has the sledgehammer outside the door.
I'm not kidding. Please call the police. I just dial 999, please. Help.
Get back on your podium. What do we agree on? I said I wouldn't tie you down this time if you agreed.
Ugh.
Anywho, so let's begin, Sally. I think the first thing we both can agree on is
Victor Hugo would have hated both of these films.
Yes. If you listen quietly, you could probably hear his ghost screaming in the distance.
No. If you put your ear to the ground, then you can hear him still turning in his grave. And at this point, I imagine we could probably hook him up to a dynamo and power Paris.
I'm going to go with one bonus for this film. With this film, you don't need to have read the book, because only two characters from the book show up in this movie, namely Quasimodo and Esmeralda, who I don't think is actually called Esmeralda in this version.
I'll be perfectly honest, I cannot remember. I watched it. I watched it, and I can say that that's the one thing I remember. And that is why the Disney sequel is better. I mean, granted, you know, it's not an adaptation of Victor Hugo's novels, and it ultimately makes no sense in the sense that at the end of the original novel... But yes, Phoebus was the only character that actually survived the original book. Everybody else died. They actually died in pretty horrific ways if you read the book. Clopin, the feisty little jester guy that's always dancing around and is so happy. Yeah, he cops it through the eye with an arrow. That's fun. We get to see, yes, Quasimodo survives the battle. Esmeralda doesn't, but he dies afterwards when Esmeralda's corpse is thrown into a mass grave along with all the other gypsies that died there. And yeah, he just crawls over to her body, lies next to her until he starves to death after a couple of days. So it's a wonderful book. Yeah, and Phoebus survives, specifically because naturally he's wanted by the Rozzers, but he escapes to another part of Paris where he marries a very wealthy woman who is also a colossal bitch queen and never lets him do anything else. They got his characterization in the movie entirely wrong in the Disney film. No, Phoebus is probably the main antagonist of the book. He is not a hero in the slightest. He is just a man who wants to get his end away with Esmeralda, and afterwards. After he was done, that's when Frollo actually tries to kill him in the book, and then he frames Esmeralda for it. Phoebus survives the murder, but he doesn't come forward because he's afraid that Frollo's going to try and murder him again. And so he's just like, I could come forward and tell people I'm still alive, or I could let Esmeralda get killed. It was a good time, but I've had what I want, love. Bye. Yeah, that was the book, and the less we talk about, I mean, that book has absolutely nothing to do with either of these two films, so I think I just wasted everybody's time.
Well, I'd say this about Golden Films. It's a much more happier affair. For starters, there's talking musical instruments, like in Beauty and the Beast. In fact, everything's alive. The doors are alive, the animals talk, one of the windows in Notre Dame blinks and laughs.
I mean, to be fair, if you ask plenty of the priests that were, you know, around, that actually served in Notre Dame, they probably thought that the windows were talking to them, but that's because they were notoriously very drunk people. That's what the Feast of Fools in the original Hunchback of Notre Dame is. It was actually a means for... back in those days, after the very beginning of the year, they would have the Feast of Fools, which was essentially they'd use up all the communion wine they had left over for the previous year. Mm. And so yes, all the priests would drink, get absolutely wrecked, and you know, start acting like morons, and that's why they called it the Feast of Fools.
Do they do that in either Disney Hunchback of Notre Dame movie?
They do it in the Feast of Fools is from the first one. It's one of the big things. It's probably the weakest part of the movie, to be perfectly honest.
Does anyone get drunk in that scene?
Oh yeah, no, everybody gets. That's the whole point of it, is that yeah, everybody's getting drunk and starts pelting Quasimodo with fruit and vegetables.
So what you're saying is the second Disney film needed people getting drunk and pelting Quasimodo fruit and vegetables.
You know what? Probably would have made it better. It would have been something, as opposed to this film, which is a whole lot of... But I'm supposed to be defending it. So actually, no, it would have made it bad. It would have made it so much worse. Trust me. I would have ruined this film, because this film is a masterpiece. It's better. It's good. It's better this way.
Moving on, every great hero, and in both films, Quasimodo is the hero. Every great hero needs a villain. Your version, the villain is...
Well, in the first Hunchback of Notre Dame, called Frollo, who is probably one of the greatest Disney villains of all time. And let's leave it at that.
Yes. Because we are discussing the second film. So let's discuss the villain of the second film, whose name I've forgotten.
I was really hoping you wouldn't ask me about that. His name is Sarush, and he's the best villain ever. I mean, he's a true narcissist. He is an evil, evil man who you just want to see him get his comeuppance. Because he is a character who is the opposite of Quasimodo in the sense that he portrays himself as some beautiful man, but he's tremendously ugly on the inside, and it makes it a nice sort of it makes a nice dichotomy between the two of them. Hmm. I mean, well, who's the villain of the Golden Films one then?
Oh, he's the greatest villain of all time, Jean-Claude, who essentially is what happens when Gaston and Dick Dastardly do the fusion dance and then somehow wind up with a Spanish accent. Truly, he's the greatest villain. Well, I'm not joking, folks. Go and look up clips from this movie. That is clearly Gaston from Beauty and the Beast. First they freaking bootleg the talking musical instruments, now they're bootlegging Gaston. I'm not joking. And that's why I think this movie is better, because it is trash, it knows it's trash. And that's why it's good.
You make a specious argument. Yeah, you should accept that it's a better film because it doesn't try to make light that it's trash. No, Hunchback of Notre Dame 2 actually does something that the Golden Films one, I guarantee you, did not do, in the sense that it actually tried to do some fun things with the animation. The only problem with that is that, yeah, it doesn't have the budget to do that, because it's trying to make a movie from what we heard about is the same budget as a episode of Goof Troop, which when you consider that you've already had to pay, you know, some quite big name actors and actresses in order to get them involved, including Haley Joel Osment for some reason. For those of you who don't know, he does a lot of stuff with Disney. He was Sora in Kingdom Hearts as well as Chip in Beauty and the Beast. So that's even more Beauty and the Beast, because apparently Disney has this thing about, apparently Disney and all of Disney's bootleggers apparently have this thing with mixing up all their French movies together.
I'll give this movie credit that I did notice the Disney sequel did not do. People attempt to talk with a French accent in the Golden Films one.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. But at the same time, I'll make the same argument I make with everything like that. And that being that everybody is talking to each other, because of how France works, France at this point in time was huge and vast, and French wasn't actually a language yet, or at least if it was a language, it was a very small dialect. Just sort of, because France had many, many, many thousands of dialects all over the country, so no real unified language at this point, which means that ultimately this is, so them all speaking with these American and British and French and all these different accents sort of going around and all these different dialects, ultimately I like to think that they are talking in French, and this is just how French people hear each other.
So it's like the chameleon circuit from Doctor Who.
Kind of, but that's just how they hear each other. It's like when you hear, I mean, when you hear somebody talking in the French accent, you cannot pick out roughly where the French accent comes from, because you do not speak French, you do not understand the accents. But you know, when you're speaking in English and then suddenly, you know, or switch to the old West Country accent, suddenly you understand that's a different dialect, that's a different way of talking, because nobody understands anybody from Gloucestershire.
I suppose it could have been worse. They could have gone, La Quasi, you are in La Danger.
Honestly, with Golden Films, I do not trust them not to have done that. I believe that you've actually found the original script for that there.
I was actually talking about the film you're meant to be defending, but, you know, I could actually see that with a Golden Films movie too.
Walt didn't hate the French, he hated the Jews. Get it right.
Oh! Oh, I'll be amazed if that makes it past the censors. So we talk about what each of our main villains' dastardly plans were.
I mean, yeah, go on then. What's your villain's dastardly plan then?
He basically wanted to marry Esmeralda, otherwise, if she didn't, he was going to throw her and the family into jail, I think. The problem is with Jean-Claude is he's such a big commanding presence in this film that he takes up so much of the movie that you forget Quasimodo's actually in it, because most of the film is about the musical instruments trying to rescue, I think Esmeralda's her name. In fact, I'm pretty sure she has three different names in this film. But that is not the point. That is just shows that they believe in the strong storytelling of their bootleg Beauty and the Beast talking instruments and household objects.
You know what? I'll concede this point to you because I can't even bring myself to defend Scarouche. He's just terrible. He's just... Oh my word. He is... You've not seen the original Hunchback of Notre Dame, so you cannot truly appreciate just how much of a step down from Frollo he really is. Like, oh my god. He's just...
I have your son, Gar Captain. Daddy, save me!
Little Haley Joel Osment acting his little heart out there when he really doesn't need to. He's too young to truly appreciate that this is the time where you just phone it in. You don't need to give your all for something like this. Just let it slide. But that being said, you know, Sarush had some interesting part. I mean, again, he's actually a fat, bald, ugly guy. He's pretty makeup and all that sort of stuff, so it shows the whole dichotomy of the good inside of the evil. The prettiness inside of the evil, and how even though, yes, Quasimodo is a frightfully hideous-looking man, he's still a good person inside. And he's the more beautiful of the two.
Whereas in the Golden Films version, not only was he the better person inside, he was also the better person outside, because it turns out he just had to stand up straight properly throughout this entire movie and comb his hair back a bit, and then he just becomes this hunk who at the end of the film starts breakdancing.
Wait, make me remember that was a thing that happened.
Actually, there's 2 points I'd like to bring up that I dismembered. One, Golden Films did try to do something with the animation. It didn't really work because they couldn't get continuity right with day and night shots, and also some characters sort of just disappeared for 2 seconds during movement scenes and swapped clothes colours during dance numbers. But they tried. They tried with what they had, which was probably very little.
You know, I also concede the point that, Hunchback of Notre Dame has a couple of borked animation bits as well. Specifically, if you're trying to watch it in widescreen, you'll notice that it wasn't meant for that. That's why there's several bits of the animation which you'll see are missing near the edge. So, like, if you see a rope suspended across the entire screen, you'll notice the rope doesn't go to the edge of the screen. It just kind of stops halfway through. It's not really noticeable until you notice it the first time, at which point you start looking for it and you see it constantly.
And I'd like to also point out a second thing I was going to bring up, is this movie has an amazing twist that comes out of nowhere and no one sees it coming. And that is Jean-Claude and Quasimodo are brothers.
You lie, sir.
They are brothers. Apparently they have the same mother, but the film plot that would make them actually half-brothers because they got different dads. That's what the film says.
Yeah, that raises many, many questions with the... That raises a lot of questions that I don't even want to go into right now.
Considering Jean-Claude's dad is this big fat guy who won't stop eating, I'm wondering, like, what kind of standards does their mother have?
I mean, are you sure that that Mr. Jean-Claude is the son of the big fat guy? Because, I mean, you know, considering the other kid.
Maybe the mom just had really great genes.
Doesn't matter what her trousers look like, really. It's all about... Right, I think the next thing you should talk about is the one thing which I can actually defend this film on properly, like wholeheartedly, not actually joking with this point, is how do the love interests hold up in this one? How good is Esmeralda in the Golden Films?
Oh, she's great. She's an actual wit, which I just remembered as something that friggin' Jean-Claude guy was against. They talk about burning her, but they don't burn her. And then she's got these magic powers, and it's implied that everything she touches comes alive, including the bricks in her prison cell that come alive and, you know, come out of the brickwork and dance with her. And then she puts back, even though she could have escaped.
Oh boy, rev up those torches and pitchforks, because I sure am ready to burn some witches. Although this is the 17th century, so chances are, you know, she probably would have been burned if she did anything else heretical like maths.
Oh, and I guess the Hunchback of Notre Dame 2 love interest was way better.
Actually, yes! She's actually not a bad character. Madeline, as she's called in this, is actually quite the interesting idea, because in this one she kind of shows she's Sarush's sort of, what would you call it? Sort of his
slave.
Pet thief, I want to say.
Slave. I saw that film. There were some creepy undertones implied in that relationship too.
Yeah, the other big undertone that they seem to keep forgetting is that workhouses are a British thing, not a French thing, especially not in the 1700s. But yeah, you know, he keeps on threatening her, I'll send you to the workhouse. And like, no, that's not a thing in France. If you were a vagrant in France, then you just died. Right. But yes, Madeline is actually quite an interesting character in this. So she has this whole thing where she's a wallflower that doesn't appreciate being a wallflower. As such, she finds herself isolated from the rest of society because of her wallflower status. This, they actually go into quite a lot of detail of Quasimodo's loneliness. That's why, you know, the worst part of the Hunchback of Notre Dame has always been the gargoyles. You ask anybody, it's like, what's the worst part of the film? They'll always say, oh, the gargoyles are terrible, terrible comic relief characters that should have been removed. But they actually play into this one a little bit more interestingly, as they make it quite clear that the gargoyles are not real in this one. They are actually just figments of Quasimodo's imagination. But it also plays into the fact that Madeline can see them too, which they use to demonstrate the fact that she's just as lonely as he is, but for the opposite reasons. He is ostracized from society because of his ugliness. She is ignored by society because of her beauty. They both have the same problems, and that's what draws them together. And Tom Hulce and Jennifer Love Hewitt as Quasimodo and Madeline, respectively, actually do have some good chemistry on screen. They bounce off each other quite well. I personally found that's... I mean, a lot of the other things in the film, I will admit, you know, not terribly great, but that is the one thing I will legitimately defend this film on, in saying that that's actually something I really, really liked in it. And I think that a lot of films wouldn't have gone that way, especially not the Golden Films one.
No, they went with, I will concede on that point, they went with the whole Quasi was good looking all along if he just believed in himself and stood up straight. And you know what? Your film probably had the better final battle too. This one, Quasi gives a whip-roaring speech and they pelt Jean-Claude with rotten fruit.
At the very least, I'll concede that. But yes, at the very least, you know, that actually happened in the book. Whereas, you know, sort of the weird acrobatic showdown with Sarouche is kind of just really pathetic. I'll have to admit that. It's just right at the very end. It's they're building up this whole thing where, you know, it's, you know, the liar has been revealed. Madeline has been found out that, oh, she was working for Sarouche the whole time just to distract Quasi whilst Sarouche steals this one really big bell which has a load of jewels inside, which ultimately, if you know anything about how bells work, would make the bell sound absolutely terrible, and also would just destroy those jewels, like, every time you try to ring it. That makes no sense. Like, okay, they go into this whole thing of, oh, it's the beauty on the inside of it, it's what matters. But I was like, okay, nice metaphor. Pity the actual metaphor makes no bloody sense, because bell would sound utterly atrocious. It wouldn't make a... Bells make a good sound because of how smooth they are inside, so having all these bumps and things would just make it all the sound waves cluster together. But, you know, so the liar is revealed. And she, you know, they're like, oh, you were just working for Sarouche the whole time. How can we trust you again? And then she comes in and she's like, Quasi, I need you to trust me on this one. He immediately just goes, okay, I trust. And it's like, yeah, all that tension that we had about 10 minutes ago, and, you know, you've not talked about, just suddenly, yeah, just like, I need you to, I was like, I don't trust you, but I need you to trust me. Okay, I trust you.
Okay, I believe you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not very strong. So I'll actually concede that the Golden Films sort of finale has at least something vaguely resembling something that Victor Hugo once wrote.
Well, it was more like he gives a rip-roaring speech, they pelt Jean-Claude with fruit, and everyone runs away. But does it explain why the executioner is there and he has a Woody Allen voice? Excuse me, sir. I'm not even going to attempt it, because I'm just going to be terrible.
Oh, jeez. Excuse me, sir. I just need to... I'm the executioner, and I just need to... I'm just like Woody Allen, and I like to sleep with little girls.
I don't think that would make the sense that.
Still one of the best lines in The Simpsons is from my Woody Allen impression. Hello, I am a neurotic nerd that likes to sleep with little girls.
Hey,
it's not my fault that he...
Anyway, so how we probably should have discussed this before recording. How are we going to decide which is the better film? Are we going to get both DVDs, throw them into a Star Trek original series style arena with the music playing da 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 until one comes out alive and the other is dead and buried?
Don't be stupid. DVDs don't have hands. It would be really boring for everybody involved.
Also, we don't have DVDs of these.
Oh, I see.
We watched one on Disney Plus and we watched the other one on YouTube.
Not only am I being held here at gunpoint, I've also been lied to about our accessibility to DVDs. Right, that's it. Just shoot. I'm done. In all seriousness, I think I'm happy to give... I think that we should probably just come to an agreement. So, honestly, if you had to sit down and watch another one, which would you watch?
Honestly, I'm going to go with the Disney one.
Yeah, I'd go with the Disney one as well. At the very least, it doesn't solve its problems just by saying, hey, all those crippling spinal issues that you've got. Did you ever just try standing up straight? At least, I mean, the Disney one is bad, but at least it's not offensively bad. Like, yeah, I think people could reasonably take offense to somebody saying, oh, well, if you've got crippling back issues, just stand up straight and you'll be fine.
I mean... That, and there were just way too many inconsistent musical numbers. Like, after they jump out, when Quasi saved her and they've jumped out a window, they cut to a musical number, and then you're like, is this the end of the film? What happens to Jean-Claude? And as soon as it's over, Jean-Claude's are like, no, no, what are you doing? Blah,
blah, blah. See, that's one thing which I don't think we did touch on was the music. And I think that's mainly because I don't think either of us has any thoughts on the music for either film. Because, yeah, Hunchback of Notre Dame 2 has some musical numbers. I'll be damned if I can remember a single one of them. But it definitely has them. But I would still go with it's definitely the better film. Because it definitely feels a lot more... It definitely feels less hamstrung. Because the problem I think that the Golden Films movie has is that it's trying desperately to work around the fact that it's a bootleg of a Disney film and it doesn't want to get sued.
Well, they had musical numbers when they could remember them because even the film forgot to put in a musical number. But they animated it for a musical number. Namely the scene where Esmeralda's mother is trapped on the farm and she convinces all the animals to sing and dance. Except you don't hear it. Because someone forgot to put the music into it.
Yeah, that's... You know, I have no words about that. That's just... Hey, we're out of it. We're drawing all these pictures of cows and sheep dancing around. Do you think we should put something to that? Nah, it's good. That's the animator's problem. That's the editor's problem. Fuck him. I mean, what kind of lonely piece of shit would ever sit around trying to edit something together? I'm sorry. Oh dear.
Right. Anyway, so in the end, folks, if you want to check out *Hunchback of Notre Dame 2* by Disney, it's on Disney Plus.
If you want to check out *Hunchback of Notre Dame* by Golden Films, get fucked. It's nowhere. Seriously, I looked for it. I couldn't find it.
Yeah, I tried re-looking for it. It's gone. Someone's gone on a mega blitz of Golden Films on YouTube.
And nothing of value was lost.
Yeah, I can't argue with that statement. Anywho, thank you again to listening to the pilot episode of the podcast that has no name. I am Lee, and I was joined by...
Matthew.
And thank you for listening. Have a nice day. I'm sure you will, because you didn't watch Golden Films Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Featured in tonight's episode were Lee James Sands and Matthew Sharp. Bad Idea music by Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com. This is your narrator, Paul Arbisi. Thank you for listening.
This program is copyright 2023, all rights reserved, and is brought to you by Dream Realm Enterprises, always warping to new dimensions.